Hello, and welcome to AMO Kenzoku, episode 32. We are a group of four bubblegum crisis boomer otaku who wanted an excuse to talk about anime, manga, and any related subjects we find interesting. The Kenzoku are Sam.
Hello.
Nick.
Howdy.
Mike.
Hey, y'all.
And I am Dylan. This episode's being recorded on the 11th of May, 2023. Today, we will be spoiling the heck out of Oshinoko Episode 1, probably not going really much further. And with that, I say Hashin! So, before we get into the main topic, we're going to take a little side into the corrections and additions, and Nick had something he wanted to put in here.
Yeah, I just want to apologize to the other Kenzoku and listeners. This topic should have been Suzume, but I was the lame one in the group and was unable to catch it in theaters. So
you have to apologize for that.
Considering that Suzume was like my most anticipated thing in like the Kenzokis, I feel like I kind of betrayed everybody's trust here. So that's the reason why. Yeah, I know I suck. But
so you're just trying to maintain. You're just trying to keep it being your most anticipated thing.
Oh, it'll be anticipated until I get the Blu-ray and God knows when, from maybe Christmas. But. But we get to talk about Oshinoko, which I think is pretty cool. So,
yep, continues to be anticipated for Nick. Sam, you had something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I actually, on your recommendation, I went out and bought the first three of the Yakuza Papers films. They're only like $4 on iTunes, $4 each. And I watched the first one, Battles Without Honor and Humanity. That is really good. Is a
whew,
bit
okay.
Yeah, it was a bit slow to get started.
I didn't watch in a while. I'm like, whew.
Yeah, it was like getting started was really kind of like, okay, you know, I wasn't really into it, but I was hooked. After a certain point, I could name it, but I don't want to make this episode or this about the the movie. But yeah, I just want to say it's really good. I recommend people go check it out. And one thing I noticed while watching the movie is they never really said Yakuza in the movie, but what they said was Gokudo. So it's the Meido pun in there was actually much better.
Oh, man.
So
it's yeah. Even better than we realized.
Yes. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty amusing.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. There's... what's it? The way of the house husband is
Gokushufudo.
Yeah,
yeah. Gokushufudo. Nobody can say that who isn't into it. But yeah, and that's a total play on the X. Yeah, so the Meido. Yeah, man, that show, that title, so deep in that just in the title of that show.
Yeah, definitely big fans of that genre. So. Yeah, I just wanted to add
okay,
that.
Okay, well, good. Well, glad my recommendation was not, since I've realized, I'm like, you know what, I actually haven't seen those movies in probably like 15 years, so maybe they aren't that good, but...
I will say, I had a hard time keeping track of everybody, because there's a lot of people, and a lot of people die, and I have trouble remembering the names, and it's like, this guy looks kind of similar to another guy, but he doesn't have the scars, so like, I guess it's different, but...
It's a slightly different gait. His name is Kensuke instead of Keisuke.
Yeah, I think there was. I was like a Shunsuke and a Sakai, or like a couple of names are definitely close together. But yeah, good stuff. Recommend it. And I'm gonna, whenever I get a soundboard set up, I'm gonna definitely get that horn stinger that plays every time somebody gets shot. Use that.
Oh, nice. That's very good. All right. With that, we're going to get right into Oshinoko episode 1. So, spoilers been warned. You're here and it's going to be spoiled. So, you're in. So, I'm going to start this out, and I kind of wrote up a little summary of the episode so we can see here. So, the story, it's about a doctor who guides a young, up-and-coming idol through a secret pregnancy. it jumps back in time to when the doctor had a young girl patient who was a big fan of the same idol. You know, it's a nice family drama with tension brought about by the interactions between the idol, the doctor, who's a fan of hers, hilarious, her manager in the idol industry. You know, pretty light fare and saccharine. But wait, there's a dark twist. Just before the doctor's about to deliver the, I'll put in quotes, Onegai twins, he is killed by a stalker. And then he's reincarnated as one of the twins, but he keeps his memory. Oh man, it's so funny, because he doesn't want to see her breasts, but he wants the attention. His twin sister has also been reincarnated, his patient, and they totally don't realize it. So, you know, it's a little dark, given the way he died, but the show's pretty light and has fun banter with the idol, her kids, and the manager and his wife. You know, it's like another variation of Spy X Family. A family with a secret, and look who's talking too, mixed together.
Oh, yeah.
There's your show. But wait, there's a twist. Then the show jumps forward about 2 years. So the talking babies are now just very advanced toddlers, like creepily advanced. So the show's really about how these toddlers deal with trying to advance in the entertainment industry while keeping it secret. They're actually idols' children. Hilarity ensues. They also are working to keep their mom's career on the rise. So that's it. We got to the end of the twist, right? Oh, wait, no, there's a dark twist. So the stalker comes back and kills the mom. Like, seriously, what? WTF? Like, it's messed up, man. So now these kind of kids are orphans but wait, there's still a twist there, which is that Aqua, the boy, realizes the only person who could have known the whereabouts of the mom at the hospital and the new home is Vader, her father. Yeah. So now the show is Idol Master crossed with Monster. And then we jump forward another 13 years. So the twins are now 16. And Aqua, the boy, is ready to kick off his revenge fantasy into high gear. So that's my layers of twists of twists of twists of the show put in there, where you think the show is going to be one thing like 18 different times in the show. So I had a little fun kind of writing this up as like, oh, what if the twist just stopped here? It's like, all right, what if the show never had the first twist? And it was like, oh man, the show would be terrible.
If it stopped after the first twist, I definitely would have stopped watching. That was the point where I was like, I don't think I want to watch this anymore.
After Spy X Family, look who's talking to.
No, reincarnation. As soon as I was like, oh
the reincarnation.
God, that. I was like, I don't want this.
You can tell this is a manga original and not a light novel original, because it's called Oshinoko and not something like I was a boring no-life doctor who got murdered by a crazed fan and reincarnated as a Nepo baby.
Yeah.
Excellent point, Mike. Actually, that's probably the number one tell if a anime is based off of a, or if it's either A, original, B, based off of manga, or C, light novel, is the title a phrase or a dissertation?
Yeah.
And just to go off that a little bit, we've mentioned this before. What's the site that basically, because it's not just light novels, it's like there's this light novel site that everything is off of now, is that correct?
Yeah, it's not just now. I mean, this is like where it all starts from for the longest time. It's Shosetsu Kani Naro. It's like, let's be a novelist. And yeah, mm-hmm. And they just shorten it to Naro, and it's
okay.
Yeah, that's where all that stuff starts. You can go read the stuff now. In fact, even stuff that's published in volumes, you can go and read the published volumes there. I don't think they take them down.
That seems like a Japanese thing to do, to not take them down.
Yeah.
So is that kind of like I haven't been there. So does it start out as like single chapter things, like when people put stuff up on the Kindle store type thing?
Yeah, it's just,
and they just try to get things to be popular, and
it's a good old it's worse now because of ads, but it's a good old like late 90s early 2000s plain text Japanese website. So it's pretty nice in that respect, although it does mean that the kanji are plenty to navigating, so if you're uncomfortable with that, good luck.
Late 90s, early 2000s Japanese website. So you're saying it's a Japanese website.
I mean, today, these days, they've adopted the Western ways of images and all the modern web dev, so it's changed a lot, but...
Well, yeah, because they adopted smartphones instead of, you know, ancient web 1.0 compatible telephones, right?
So. Right, yeah.
Okay, because I always forget about it, and basically it's because of, this is a complete and total aside here, but it's because of the way you search and find stuff on there that has led to people having these ludicrously long titles so that you get this very specific description of what the thing is before you... to try and get people to read it.
Yeah. I think it's not so much like the searching thing. It's just like they just need to stand out. And because you don't have like images, all you get is the title. So like you cram as much into the title as you can. Yeah.
I mean, businesses, you know, visibility as a business, as that a lot of time and effort is spent in, as we know from ep one of this show, actually. Like it does come up that when... she's outshining the star, and then her role is seriously cut down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, way to pull us back into the actual topic here, Mike. this is interesting that it was from a manga, and the title of it, and this is always one of those interesting localization things, is to, you know, the to translate or not, because the Oshi no Ko, and I'll defer, but Oshi, the kanji that's used there, means to basically be like a big fan or supporter. And in general, I think it actually is very specifically used to apply to like a member of a idol group or like a player on a team or something. Like, you know, you could say
it's,
like, oh, I'm
it's a term that's primarily used on somebody in like who's a major player in entertainment media. Yeah. Mostly idols, occasionally actors, but primarily like idols. And like,
would you use that with like an athlete or
no? No. I think I could be wrong, but I believe the term was even used in the last very final scene of Akuma Maid War when the three guys are walking to the, you know, Neo Tontokoton, and they're saying, oh, we gotta see, you have to see my Oshi, and like their favorite. So I believe that's the term that was used. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's it. So, but yeah, Oshi no Ko is kind of a play on words in that sense, because it's they're the children of of an idol star. And also, I believe it's also a pun, because her name is Hoshino, and, you know, Hoshi is star. So I think it's a play on Hoshinoko as well, because she's Hoshino and they're her children, but she's also an Oshi. So I believe that's the etymology there. I could be wrong, but my Japanese sense is telling me that's what the author was going for.
I buy it. Yeah, I buy it.
Yeah, and Nick, you have read a good portion of the manga. As I understand... basically the first episode, which is it's about, I think it's about 85 minutes.
It's basically
long,
a movie.
And it's, you know, if you put that in terms of normal episode length, that'd be about four episodes of content, maybe even more, maybe four and a half, maybe even closer to five, just because there's none of the recap and intro and outro and all of those things that, you know, all the tricks that you do to make 18 minutes of content into 21 minutes of content. And as I understand, basically that episode really was like the first volume of the manga.
Yep. Pretty much exactly. The final scene is pretty much the very end of Vol 1. Yeah. So basically the entire Ep 1 is the Vol 1 manga. So I think it was justified because Sam mentioned a previous episode, or maybe it was a previous conversation. I think it was a previous episode where he was saying, you know, if it was broken up into three episodes, he may have stopped at Ep 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it was very clever, because you really don't get into it's basically a really long prelude. Like, they completely bait and switch and honeypot you, like you explained, Dylan, about four different times in the first volume / first episode before you actually figure out what the main, you know, crux of the show is, at least inferred to be. So, is what else. I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, that's where I'll leave it.
Well, we did already, didn't we? Or do you mean?
I mean, beyond stuff? Beyond that one.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's such a weird thing, because it seems like a lot of the show wants to be this kind of commentary on idol culture and kind of a look at it. But, you know, like this first episode, like, it's hard to say, like, is it doing it a fair job? And like, why spend so much time on this, you know, this super long, you know, kind of main character, you know, feel like you're getting the main character, or at least that the mom, if not, maybe not the main, is going to be close to it. And then they rip her out of you. I'm just like, that's such a weird, it's such a weird thing that like, I can't, you know, frankly, I can't think of another thing where the closest would be, what was the AIC show that killed off everyone, basically. It was a topic of...
Are we talking about Gare Zero?
Yeah, Gare Zero.
Yeah, Gare Zero, yeah. Yeah.
I feel like Oshinoko does what we were talking about that one episode, where, you know, a show where Ep1 completely baits you in a different direction before getting to the real, you know, real plot. I mean, I think Oshinoko just does it in a longer form, but it would qualify for that. The first step definitely... it doesn't completely bait and switch you, because it really just gives you I feel like what you see in Ep 1 would be in another, like, say, a drama, you know, shoujo manga or something, would be something where you would maybe see these occurrences, like, as a flashback later on in the series. They just decided to put it all in the, you know, play chronologically instead. Because I could totally see a show where you see the two kids, you know, you see Aqua and Ruby leaving for school and saying bye, mom, and you see the photo of them with their mom, and you think, oh, they're going to school, and you know their mom is not there anymore, and then you find out through some happenings that their mom was actually an idol who was horribly murdered. Well, instead they just show all that happening first. So
that's interesting. Why? And I'm not saying anyone has the same answer, but like, why would they? Did they choose to not do that? Because I honestly think that kind of like the flashbacky way has been done a lot, and is almost like a lot more expected of the way in, is the, you know, the drop you in the middle of the story kind of thing, and then show you the past.
I mean, it's not going to have the impact, I think. Like, if you already know what's going to happen, like, it's not as impactful, right?
Does that work as well for setting up a revenge story? I feel like a revenge story works better if you care about the reason they're having revenge.
I think Mike nailed it. They make you attached to Ai, right? I mean, I feel like for me, like they kind of make Ai a bizarre character, right? Like she seems very self-aware about what she's doing as an idol. Like she even see that in that one flashback with the manager, right? She's like, you know, I'm a pathological liar. I don't think I'm a good fit. And he's like, it doesn't matter if you're lying, as long as you're providing the fans what they want. It doesn't matter if you're lying. And that kind of was an eye-opener for her. She's like, well, I guess it doesn't matter if she's lying. If she's making a lot of people happy with what she does, she was okay with it. But then she came into that weird existential crisis of, you know, is her love for her children a lie? Like, that was a big, you know, crisis, like, personal crisis for her, right? And at the very end, when she actually tells them she loves them, and she has this huge sense of relief, even though she is bleeding out of her stomach, that, you know, she actually truly does, but when she said it, she didn't feel like it was a lie. So I think that just builds this huge amount of attachment, and it's literally ripped away from us at the very end, right?
Well, and then especially too, when you find out that the very end, it's like, oh yeah, and I'm gonna catch the guy. It's like, oh, okay, now I'm really invested. It's not just like a, hey, my mom's an idol. It's a, my mom's an idol, and I'm going to catch this guy. I'm going to get my revenge.
Yeah. And now take all that, all those tropes, and then throw like Meitante Konan in there too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have they announced how long this anime is going to be? Is it just a standard one core, or?
At least looking at the episode list on iDive, it shows it just as a 12 eps or whatever.
True, though it did for UI too, so. It's hard
to
say.
I don't know. Is the manga long enough to, Nick, is the manga long enough you think to support
11 volumes
seasons?
Already starting since going. 2020, so.
Yeah, it's still going. So I would assume that it's very easily could. I would assume it's going to be based off of popular. I mean, as far as I understand, this is one of the darlings of this season. So I would assume it's getting the views that it needs to get.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if it gets a sequel. It's just a, well, would the initial run be longer than one season?
Right.
Because so. I feel like that could force the movie-length first ep, because I just don't, can't think of a good way to tell the story that's in the first ep over a one-core show. Like, you could do it as four eps if you had 26 eps to play with, but burning a third of your series before you get to the real story doesn't leave you much left.
And if you've done it like that, then Sam and I and maybe everyone else has already bailed after episode one, even if it looks nice. We're like, oh, this show sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have made it to four episodes. I would have made it through the third one and been like, okay, this doesn't really seem like it's really going anywhere. I'm done.
But that's kind of interesting there, in that like we all acknowledge it, like if the, like, because there's a couple of, there was like three or four, just like literally the screen completely just like fades to black in the episode, like roughly every 20 minutes, and like, so it could have been done that way, and I think they definitely made the right choice to say no, this is all one thing here. And I think it also dramatically makes it, like, the watching process is different, because it's like, as you watch it, you know that it's 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, okay, I know this isn't just they're stopping here and that's the end of it, and then we're gonna, you know, Ranma repeat our way through the next 16 episodes. And
the pacing is going to be different for a thing that's done episodic too. Like, even though there are places where they could cut it, like, you know, that they shift beats around, right, to kind of make things land a certain way, and so that you come back for the next one. So they may stretch things out a little bit more, or, you know, compress things a little bit more. Whereas if you have it over like a whole hour and a half, it's going to have probably a better
rhythm. Yeah, the editing's going to be a bit different, because you're not trying to hit that A part commercial, B part.
Right. There's actually in this age of YouTube, it's kind of wonderful. They're promoting it pretty hard on YouTube. And they have a mini documentary thing where it's basically interviews with like staff. I haven't seen how many more there are, but there's one ep up at least. And one of the things they do talk about is the length of the first episode. And from the beginning, they're like, oh no, we have to do this all as one. We don't want to break it up. So whether it's going to be like a TV special or in theaters or whatever, we're going to do this.
It's a really bold choice. Like, I can see why they did it, but I'm having trouble thinking of a time it's been done before outside of the OVA space. Now, admittedly, I haven't been keeping up with current anime that much, but...
I mean, I'm not... I agree, but at the same time, I'm not super surprised, because the manga was incredibly lauded. Like, it hasn't been around super long, but it got very popular very quickly. Considering that it's not a very normal genre, like, it doesn't fit into the typical explosively popular genres. So, because it's won a number of awards. It was nominated for the grand prize for the Tezuka Award, which is, like, pretty much the cream of the crop. It didn't, you know, win, but it was nominated for it, which shows how popular and well-received it was. I mean, it is really good. The art, I mean, I was happy enough with how... the Douga Kobo animated it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks good. I wouldn't say it looks amazing, but it looks good. The manga art is like top tier. Like, it is very, very good. So I was a little surprised at how much I appreciated the animation, because I was like, there's no way this is gonna animate well. Like, I just had this feeling. But Douga Kobo did a good job. I think I wasn't sure when it was originally announced, because they kind of are all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, some of the stuff they do, yeah, I really, really like. Like, they did, I think they did Gekkan Shoujo Nozaki-kun, which I like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
That, despite being a pretty mundane show as far as, like, the action is concerned, like, they actually, to me, it looked like they animated it with care, even though it's a show that didn't really need good animation, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So
they didn't screw it up, at least.
No, they certainly didn't. I liked it quite a lot. That was a surprising show.
Love that show.
Yeah. Yeah, nope. That was a gem of a show. But, you know, I mean, they've also done other stuff that I didn't really care about. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's like the Madhouse trait that we've referenced before from like the early 2000s, where it's like sometimes they're amazing, sometimes they're garbage.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I haven't watched the vast majority of what they release, because usually what they make is really not my cup of tea, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they're a studio that have been around for a long time doing, you know, lots of support and in-between work, and they have their few shows that they've been the lead on, but I agree, they're not, like, really no one in there, like, they're people that have done a lot of stuff, but they're people that have done, like, a ton of things where I'm like, oh man, this is the person who's directed four of my, you know, favorite shows of the last decade or whatever, which is always kind of interesting, because you're like, oh really, you did that, and then that kind of garbagey show or thing that was just like nothing, that was something that everyone was like, oh, this show is really great, it's awesome that they're doing this manga that everyone is like super excited by. Everyone's kind of like, oh, they're doing it, I don't know, but you know, then they actually pulled off and do a good job, and you're like, oh, okay, well, good job. On the popularity, yeah, High Dive has said that it has been their most popular, like, basically single episode ever.
Wow.
Wow, that's saying something, yeah, considering like it's a freaking movie, basically.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're saying it is, like, I don't have all the exact stuff they wrote, but it was, like, they said that it, let's see if I can load it up in the background here, but it was, yeah, here it is. Yeah, they said that the first episode of became the streaming's number one series launch in the streamer's history last week, based on the number of views it achieved in the first week. And they also stated that it shattered all trial start records for High Dive, delivering the most trials added in the in their thing. So, oh, yeah, it has been, yeah, huge in the U.S. I don't know if it's as popular in Japan. I don't know how to find that.
It's been very well received, just based on what Sam was saying about the amount of YouTube, official YouTube coverage it's getting. I would assume it's been very, very popular.
Because it's hard to break above the YouTube din of everything. So, the manga, the original creation, I didn't realize this, it was written by two different authors, and they actually had kind of an interesting interview on Anime News Network, where one of the authors, Akasaka, was the original writer for Kaguya-sama, yep, the Love is War, and the other one, Yoko Yari, is another one who wrote, it's a thing I'd heard of and never seen or read, but Scum's Wish. I think it's like Kuzu no Hoshigari or something like that. It's kind of interesting that like two people that they kind of came together to write this, and it seems like they have some kind of interesting trade-offs in how they actually do their writing. It's not like, as I understand, I could be wrong, that like it's not quite like Death Note, where one person did the writing and another one did the art, and they were very separated in terms of who was doing what. It seemed like it was almost kind of more like a shared responsibility. I could be a bit wrong there, but that was the implication that I got.
My understanding was Akasaka's does this the writing and the composition, and Yokoyari is doing the illustrations.
Okay, so it is low there, but in reading the interview, it sounded like some of the story and things like that were also coming kind of from.
I totally can believe it, because it's not like Yokoyari is exclusively just an artist. She definitely has done her own too, so she probably has some input. For sure. Like, I haven't really read any of her stuff, but I'm just looking at kind of, you know, what she has done. So it looks like she actually started as a, they call it adult manga artist. So the art style definitely tracks. I mean, it's, you gotta be good to do that. Let's just say. So, yeah, I really love the color palette she uses as well. Really good color, so definitely a good team up.
Is that licensed in English?
Yen Press, I believe.
Okay, they're not bad.
And it says here, is that right, that Shueisha's Manga Shueisha's Manga Plus service is releasing it digitally, at least in the US.
That thing.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, great. Come on, just put it on one of either Shonen Jump or Viz, and let's stop having this garbage. Put it in one spot. I don't need another 10 subscriptions.
Tear down this wall.
So, yeah, kind of like another thing, just as a question there of like, why did this thing like become so big and so popular? Like we like it, but there's a lot of weird stuff that frankly we like that doesn't make a show like literally the most popular thing in High Dive's like history, and you know, and makes it something that it's a show that everyone is talking about. So I think that's kind of a question I have.
I'm all about a show business revenge story, but it's not like Skip Beat was incredibly, incredibly popular, at least in the US. Certainly not popular enough to do those High Dive numbers.
I think that it's because it took so much, like, different elements, so many different elements, like Dome was describing, and crammed them all together and somehow made it pretty seamless, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, none of the way the story was presented in Ep 1 felt jarring to me. Like, well, not in a weird way, not in an inorganic way. Like, yeah, when it jumped thematically, like, we're like, whoa, like, at the very beginning, right, when he's pushed off the cliff by the stalker, you're like, what the heck? I'm like, what the heck just happened? Like, that's bizarre. And you're wondering, so, you know, I thought this was going to be about a weird relationship between, you know, an idol and her doctor, and then you used to find out, you know, that it's not really about that. And then, like Sam said, it's like, oh no, please don't tell me they're going to do this. And then everybody just kind of groans when you find out that he's reincarnated as a baby. And when I saw that in the manga, I'm like, oh, did I just lose the manga lottery? Did I pick this on art and art alone? And I persevered and went through, and by end of all, when I'm like, holy crap, no wonder this is like so popular, I realized. And it's because it lulls you into this, it comforts you, right? Almost like you get really comfortable in the groove of it. You're like, oh, things are coming together. Like, you know, she's kind of weird, but she's keeping her career, and she's like making, you know, she's making a successful career for her kids, which is pretty noble and honorable. And like, you know, the only kind of conflict that came about beyond the, you know, the initial murder was like the wife of the president, you know, threatening to like blow their cover. And then they kind of came up with a creative way to, you know, spin that out. And she ended up actually being like a pretty, honestly, pretty like critical person in their life. And, you know, you're going and going and going. And then, you know, a trend that I've been noticing lately is ever since I mentioned realistic deaths since the Harlock episode, like, my goodness, that stabbing death scene was difficult to watch. That was really difficult to watch. I was pretty hard to read in the manga, but it was done very, very well. Like, yeah, following a Ranko's stabbing in Akiba Maid War, this is probably just as unsettling to me. I was just like, oh gosh, this is really horrifying and unsettling. But again, great. I can appreciate from an artistic standpoint, they really did a good job on that. So,
yeah, I did not see that twist coming. I did see the reincarnated as a baby, and that his patient would be reincarnated as the other twin. I saw those coming.
Right.
But was not expecting then that final twist, yeah.
Wait, what was your giveaway? I want to know that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly when, but I think it was how much time they were spending talking about, you know, wouldn't it be great to be reincarnated or to be the child of an idol? That seemed like an interesting place to go if it wasn't going to be plot relevant.
Okay.
Yeah, they leaned on that particular nugget pretty heavily, obviously, but they definitely lulled you in those sense of security, and it's not like they didn't leave the clues, right? Because there was a brief scene where you see the stalker guy in his, you know, in his Hikikomori Hole, like, you know, seething with rage early on in the episode, and it kind of just, you know, it's just kind of left alone for a while.
Wasn't sure if he was going to get killed by a stalker. I just thought he was going to, like, get run over by a truck or something, but...
no truck couldn't hear.
So, I want to take this in slightly a couple of things that I'm like, oh, maybe something explained later, but, like, you know, the Japanese police force prides themselves on always getting their man and getting the conviction. And this guy literally pushes, like, the only doctor in this, like, country town off a cliff and is able to just, like, run and disappear away. And then apparently is able to, well, actually, no, he did get caught after stabbing Ai, but...
Well, he committed suicide, right? Like, they didn't even have to catch him. They found him dead, so...
And no one found the doctor, even though the cliff was within walking distance of the hospital.
Well, that's true. That is a point in it, right? Like, he keeps looking if anybody's found his body.
Well, they never disclose that, so...
Which I think is an interesting thing to leave sitting there, and I'm hoping it'll come up later.
And other things that are kind of dangling out there that I'm wondering, like, oh, are they going to go somewhere with it? You know, that that Ruby and Aqua don't realize that they have known each other. And there was the part where Aqua has the hint that Ruby might be the patient, but then she throws him off. And it's one of those things where I wonder, because it's definitely done from Akko's perspective more than Ruby's, but it's like, is it that, does she have an idea of who Aqua was?
And she kind of does at the end of that scene when she throws him off, but she's like, nah, there's no way.
That bit is kind of frustrating to me. That was one of those things where I kind of roll my eyes. It's like, they've been together for... like 16 years, the whole time they've been like fully conscious, more or less adults, and they never talk about that. Like, that would just be something I would be dying to talk about. Like, I don't know how you would not deal with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stretch plausibility a bit, though. To be fair, with all the other things going on, plausibility's already pretty stretched.
Well, I mean, sure, it's fantasy, really, right? But at the same time, it requires some amount of plausibility to keep me going, right? If it's not grounded enough, then I'm not going to buy anything.
Yeah, it does this to me. It does. That's what makes this series so fascinating. Is it's not straddling a line. It just jumps back and forth, way across the line between absolute ridiculousness and then like incredibly compelling, like actual drama. And it weaves back and forth really, really well. And, you know, moments that you think are absolutely ridiculous. Like, for example, like the director, right? The director, you know, kind of sees Ai's talent, but just says, you know, she's, you know, another good face in this industry, but I don't necessarily think that she's going to be cut out for it. It's a pretty rough industry. And then he's talking about it to Aqua like he's a functional adult and doesn't even think anything of it. He's like, man, kids these days, like, it's all that YouTube, right? Like, just brushes it off with that. And that's good enough, right? And then they just continue to have, like, actual adult conversations. And, you know, that's how he convinces Aqua to... He says, oh, I'll let her in this movie I'm making, but you have to be in it too. And that whole scene was really cool with that the kind of, you know, segue into how Aya's career kind of catapults, right?
Yeah. He's actually a really fun character.
Are you talking about the director?
Yeah, the director, yeah. I like that he's got this kind of like semi... father figure that it's almost like he adopted him. He adopted the director.
He's one of the few like noble characters in the first that first app. Like, everybody kind of seems to be out for themselves, right? Being in the entertainment industry, but he seems to have, you know, be fair, like, kind of has, you can tell that he's like got a noble personality just based on like how he...
I'm not expecting the series to do this to us, but I really hope he doesn't turn out to be murdered dad.
Oh man. Now you've incepted me that he's
I'm gonna say no, but that would be really bad.
Can I, yeah.
Well, what I'll say, Mike, is that seems incongruous, because think about how I had to, like, go to a payphone to call.
Seems incredibly unlikely. I'd say 99% the series won't do it to us, but...
Because she's telling him, like, oh, you should see them, this one tells... Well, obviously, director already knows, right? Director's been interacting with them, so...
All but right, yeah.
I'll leave it at that. I'll let people think what they want to think, because I like that this show definitely strips plot armor utterly and completely, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's a non-factor. Like, they spent so much time building up Ai as this compelling, complicated, relatable character. Even if, you know, you yourself have never had aspirations of being an idol, it really humanized, you know, the kind of idol, like, you know, the star, you know, of an idol group in an interesting way.
You feel bad for idols, right? Like,
oh yeah, job for, definitely.
Yeah, so that's the thing I want to kind of go into for the last section here is kind of, I'll call it idol mastery, and like, it's a whole lot of stuff in the, a lot of the problems, or, you know, there's not problems in other industries, but, you know, this one has its focus, which is a lot of the problems and issues in the Japanese idol and entertainment industry. And I think it does a very cool job at stating a lot of things that seem like, yeah, that's probably not too far off from reality.
I mean, some of the most, in my opinion, relatable and like cutting parts of the were when Ruby was looking through social media, right, and seeing just how toxic it made her, like seeing, yeah, you know, these people saying, talking crap about her mom, and say, like, you guys, and she's screaming at them, right, like in this just blind rage. I'm like, wow, this is incredibly relatable, and just it cuts so deep, because that really is, to me, what social media does, and it puts these, you know, famous people in this weird position where it's like completely dehumanizes them, and people justify it by saying, oh, they're famous, so it's okay if we say, you know, terrible things about them, you know, on social media,
without even getting into the things that people do to famous people with deepfakes and things. Ugh.
Right. Like, I mean, that's a whole separate issue. But just you know, Japan's always one step behind as far as, I feel like, net social media stuff. I feel like just relatively recently, the whole concept of, you know, like YouTubing and like you know, social media to being a platform for people to voice their opinions has become relatively common. Where it's been incredibly common here for, you know, the better part of what, probably 15 years now. So,
I mean, it has, you know, already had been a big factor even then, but it's certainly a bigger factor now. I guess it was more image boards and things before, but it certainly could affect the industry when the internet took an immediate dislike to something.
I mean, 2Channel's been around forever, and that stuff's been going on there in text-only form for a very long time.
Yeah. But 2Channel was still... only really not perused by, I would say, the average person in Japan, right? Where I feel like even average people in Japan now partake in social media.
I mean, I think that 2chan, especially after some of those big stories that came out of it, like, I mean, obviously more people use it now than they did before, but like, I'm pretty sure it had pretty deep penetration after, like, it was Densho Otoko, and there was another famous 2chan story. I don't remember if it got made into a drama or anything, but I feel like it was bigger over there, and maybe because of the phones, like because everybody had it on their phone.
Oh, that's a good point.
It had that, and, you know, the Japanese internet culture has, you know, as you said, it's gone a little bit away, but it's still been so much more text-based than elsewhere for, you know, any number of reasons. But, yeah, there's that. Yeah, I remember Densho Otoko watching that show back in 15 years ago, whenever that came out.
Yeah, and you even had, in the very Web 1.0 form, Perfect Blue, so you obviously had internet as a big presence in, like, idol culture and fandom going even back into the 90s.
Yeah, that's true. If you're just talking about Otaku, then yeah, definitely had the crazy people, the what is it? The 2% rule is 2% of every community is like absolutely insane, awful people.
Let's
keep it down at 2%. Let's hope we keep it down at 2%.
I've always heard 27% is the crazification factor, but okay.
Optimistic.
I thought it, within the idol thing, I thought it was kind of interesting that the with the first TV movie that I was in where she got cut, you know, her part got cut out, and it had this whole thing about it being between a negotiation of time and power between the production agencies. And I think that's a thing within like the particularly the idol industry, but it seems like it's on a lot of like the TV and variety show industry over there. It feels like much more of a thing that doesn't quite exist in the US, where the popularity of a thing is more a product of the agency's power, and they get to dictate, you know, percentage of screen time of a thing versus having that be, you know, controlled via individual agents and contracts, which is, it seems like such a weird thing, but I don't know, is it any better or worse than how things are done in the US? I don't know, but I thought it was very interesting how they put it out there.
I feel like it's something that was probably more of a thing here back when the strong studio system was still a thing in like the 30s through 50s.
I mean, yeah. I have to imagine it's still a thing even in the US, right? Because you have these agencies, as soon as you have them repping more than one person, they're going to use that as leverage, right? To say, oh, you get my guy in here, you get this up and comer, and then I'll give you one of my other bigger stars for something next.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly know about bundling, like, you know, you can have ESPN on your cable system, but you have to take these 20 other channels too.
Mm-hmm.
Or bundling in anime DVD releases. Sure, ADV, you can have Ava, but you also have to take these 13 other series that nobody wants.
Or Costco cereal bundles, where you can have Cheerios, but you also have to take Grape Nuts Cheerios also.
And as far as contracts over screen time, I'm sure it happens, though the only issue one that I can really think of right now for a unique and otherwise impossible situation is with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where you had Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse and Daffy Duck and Donald Duck on sharing the screen, but the agreement with Disney and Warner on that was that they had to have the exact same, like, literally the exact same amount of screen time.
Huh.
I mean, that doesn't...
That's interesting.
That didn't... Yeah. Regarding, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like, that's like a... That was like a dream scenario, right, as far as crossovers go, so...
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. I couldn't imagine the negotiations being otherwise.
So, coming back to this, and this is, you know, just based off of, you know, a TV show based off of a manga that's doing stuff, but in this one, it seems more like... It's not like that was something that was ironed out by the, you know, go with the Who Framed Roger Rabbit's, like, because that would have been something that was, you know, probably ironed out by the lawyers before they did anything. It seems like this was something that was like, oh yeah, we've shot all this stuff and her stuff was really good, but no, she's the actress who's supposed to be, you know, cute but a good actor, so we can't have this other person. So it's almost like, oh yeah, we got through finished editing, and then one of the agencies looked at it and was like, nope, you got to cut out more here. Almost like, yeah, a, you know, like a government censorship agency or something.
I mean, I don't know about agencies or not, but I 100% believe that's happened with, you know, big stars who were upstaged by a newer actor here. Like, you want to make the person you're paying millions of dollars for the film look good.
Yeah, it's true. And that's just one of those interesting kind of inside baseball things, yeah, that, like, I think is kind of a fun part of the show.
It's always about making the best art. It is very much about return
politics.
On investment,
well,
particularly when you're throwing hundreds of millions of dollars around.
Well, think of it in the scope of, you know, if you're the if you're the director and you're being told by the agency that represents that, you know, that young actress who probably hold, you know, let's just say 50% of all of the top actors, right? Like, if you piss off that agency, they basically blacklist him, and now he won't get anybody from that agency. So now he has to dig for more random. So I totally can see that as a believable scenario of you know, a company yeah. leveraging their huge influence to, you know, force change. I mean, it seems yeah. to me that plot element seemed very believable.
Yeah, I mean, no idea how often you get into, like, Mulholland Drive where you get notice from someone, random mysterious person above, this is the girl. Like, I wouldn't believe that's never happened, but I don't know how often it does.
Coming back to this show, another thing that I think was done real well was the music and the dance sequences and stuff in there. And the I don't think it's not a huge spoiler or anything, but the song that plays over the end credits of episode one is indeed the opening song for future episodes, and man, it is a baller of a song. It is way cool. At least that's my opinion of it. Because it has this very kind of like, it's like this almost kind of like, it's just shy kind of rapping.
It's extremely it's K-pop with
it's Yoasobi that does it, I think. So they're very big right now.
But this is like this like pop rap is like mega popular in K-pop, but this one has like a J-pop spin on it, which is cool.
On it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Agreed.
I mean, it's some things I don't get into with K-pop very often, but I can see it being a popular style.
You can tell they dumped a lot of assets into making that opening, because I mean, it's a show about idols, and right, so you gotta make sure that opening catches people. Otherwise, what the hell are you thinking, right? So
it's got a good dark tone to it, which I really appreciate.
Yeah,
if it's a show.
There's so many other other good insert pop songs from B. Komachi. But I think there's a bunch of interesting stuff in there with the idol stuff in there, and how much money they actually like make as idols. And I think that was kind of another interesting little bit in there, which is probably not that far off, where it's like, you know, I is doing reasonably well and is up and coming and is making like $2,000 a month or something, basically, after expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Which explains why she has to do side gigs, right? Like, you know, commercials here and there and modeling gigs here and there to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And lives in a pretty fairly modest apartment to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like that about the show, actually. The mix of the whole mystery and storyline and all that stuff, and there's the whole revenge plot going, but they also have this cool... Well, to me anyways, very fascinating, like, you know, like business manga type stuff, which I love. I think that's always really interesting, like kind of, oh, business drama maneuverings. Yeah, like you have this agency doesn't want, you know, this girl to outshow their girl. So this and that. And, oh, the director is talking about, you know, all this stuff, a lot of inside baseball type things. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it's always fun to have it where it's like, all right, this seems pretty plausibly well done, such that like you believe that it would be, you know, possible that it's reality based. You're like, okay, I'm learning a little bit about this industry, you know, the inside baseball stuff of this industry, and you're like, yeah, this seems plausibly believable. You know, it's not a primary source, but it's
it's worse than Wikipedia, but you know, it's believable enough that it's very entertaining.
And it's 100% believable when money has changed hands for everything up to the position of almost everything you run into in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. Definitely. Okay. Well, we are running out of time here, so we'll wrap up and give final thoughts. I will start and give mine and say, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised and very happy that they did this first episode as a whole thing, because I think I would have noped out. Probably, honestly, I might have noped out halfway through the first episode if it hadn't been as long of an episode and they hadn't been like, all right, well, they're going somewhere and I've heard it's okay, so I'm gonna stick with it. And I'm definitely glad. And the rest of the show has been pretty good thus far. It's definitely one I've been looking forward to watching when the episodes air. I will pass the mic to Mike.
Yeah, I've only watched the first ep so far, but I am really digging it and will absolutely continue watching this show to see where it goes from here. Because, yeah, like you, I'm also kind of a sucker for the business-y elements and the, you know, bits of inside baseball. One thing about show business shows and manga, it's something that a writer presumably actually knows something about firsthand in a way that isn't necessarily as true for non-show business topics.
Yeah. That's
like, it can be overdone, but when it's done well, it's often good.
All right. I will pass it off to Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I had the advantage of knowing what was coming, having read the manga, which is why I was very hyped when this was announced for this season. I was very excited because I was like, all right, let's see if they can do it justice, because I already kind of resigned to the fact that the art just can't match, you know, the original source. That's just the kind of art the manga has. But seeing some of the, you know, key art early on, I was like, oh, okay, it looks fine. And then, interestingly enough, I remember commenting, I'm like, oh, yay, F1 Oshinoko is out. And I turned around, I'm like, and it's 90 minutes. I do not have the time for this right now. And I hit pause because I was like, interesting choice. And then I thought about it. I'm like, oh, I know exactly why they did that. And so I was like, okay, well, I pretty much knew exactly where it was going to end. But, you know, wanted to see how it got there. But yeah, definitely going to keep watching it. Highly recommend. I think this has the potential to be show of the season, if it can maintain art level consistency. So we shall see.
All right, and Sam.
Yeah, just on Nick's comment about the length, I had the exact same reaction at I think the exact same time. I literally sat down, logged into Discord just to comment on the length and see that Nick had just like minutes earlier sent the exact same thing. It's like, oh, I'm gonna sit down and watch this while I eat lunch. Oh no, I'm not. Guess I'm gonna watch this over the weekend. Yeah, but it was surprisingly good show. Definitely my favorite one this season, and just another single show, like always, to keep me on high dive. Yeah, it's a good show. I'm a little worried that the series isn't done yet. So, given how it seems like they care so much about the series that they're not just going to make stuff up. If they decide not to continue, that they'll just end it somewhere good.
I'm hoping they find a good stopping point, and then we get more once there's more to make.
Yeah, I think that would be
I'm fairly certain that it'll carry traction, because just looking through YouTube right now, the official music video for Idol from Byosabi currently has 85 million views. So it's catching eyes.
Yeah, well, I'm just in my sidebar right now. I see the crappy 4K 60 FPS Ultra HD closed captioning has 234,000 views. So,
yikes!
Yeah. And to that, the last thing I'll say is that I made reference to this earlier, but the YouTube channel, the official YouTube channel for the anime, is actually pretty good. They post a lot of interesting stuff, including this like behind the scenes, like documentary style stuff. It's like the first one's out. It's like 10 minutes. I'm hoping they'll continue it. Yeah, it's very cool. It has English subs, so you don't have to worry about that.
Nice. All right, so with that, we're going to close out. But we have a topic for next time, but it's nothing anyone needs to do any particular preparing for, but you can prepare on your own if you want. We're going to talk about otaku games, which can be a very wide topic, so everyone's going to do a BYOG, and we'll kind of see where we go. We might hone it in a little bit on our side chat before the episode, but we're finally going to have, first time in a while, a non a intentionally non-anime focused one, but I'm sure we'll take it back around to anime and manga and all these other things. So, with that, thanks for listening, and until next time, this is AMO Kenzoku saying Saraba.